This week on Cantina Chronicles, the team enjoys some final beverages on their beachfront estate on Pabu as they break down both the Acolyte trailer and recent episodes of Bad Batch before packing their things and going into hiding from the Empire. Let's go!
Chronicles, you are. If you're joining us, we are having our last drinks, our final drinks on Pabu before we go into hiding from the Empire.
Yeah.
Our next drinks are going to be in a cavern.
Yeah, season 3, episodes 8 and 9.
Yeah.
But first, we
have to jump ahead. But Pabu's toast. But anyway, we'll talk about that.
Oh gosh, Adam, always with the like edgelord beginning here. Super sorry we missed last week. It happens, you know, things happen. This
people
is probably not going to become a bi-weekly podcast, but you know, things happen. It's funny you say that, Adam. You're like, people get sick. No one gets sick in the galaxy far, far away. Did you notice that?
That's true. There's very rarely a cold. Like, you ever seen
I'm pretty sure
disease, viruses and things, contagions named in the books, but. Yeah.
Really? Okay. Like, because I feel like Bacta kind of like solved the cold, you know?
I guess that's true, right? Because wouldn't you think everyone would be sick because you're intermingling like people from different planets constantly? Oh. Like that's what wiped out. Like, anytime the Europeans would come to any culture they didn't know, half of them would die from just being exposed to new illnesses and bugs. So I'm like, why isn't the universe? Oh man, I just like thought of a new sci-fi thing. Basically, right. Everyone just dies. Like
the intergalactic flu.
Yeah, the second we start intergalactic traveling, everyone's dead. Everyone dies. Like, we wipe out the entire galaxy through intergalactic travel.
It's like, oops, I got alien face AIDS. And then, like, your face falls off. And
all right, illnesses in Star Wars, blood burn, carbon sickness.
That's not like, you know. Sorry, what else catchable. You got there?
Yeah,
what else you got, Grant?
Schilmer's syndrome.
That sounds fake.
Syndrome that's sounds like books. Syndrome sounds like that is something you get, like, that's genetic or built in. Like, I want contagions. What do you got for contagions?
Bloodburn is the only one I'm seeing.
Bloodburn. That might be enough.
Yeah. I don't know if I need bloodburn in my life at all. Anyways, we're here. It's great. We missed a couple of big weeks. Two amazing episodes of Bad Batch that we'll get to in the later second half of the segment. Of the episode, rather. And the first thing we want to talk about is this trailer that we actually were like, where is that trailer? The last time we talked to you.
Yeah.
And like 3 days later,
we were like, there's got to be a trailer soon, right?
Yeah.
Like June.
I appreciate Kathy, obviously one of our favorite listeners, was like, oh, right. The trailer, let's get that out. Like, that's, I imagine that's how.
Not only did they put out a trailer, it was quite possibly one of the best Star Wars trailers I've seen for a live action
series. It's really good. It does exactly what you want out of a trailer. It like tells you nothing but hints at everything.
Yeah, exactly. We got Vernestra Rowe up in there, which is cool. We knew she was going to be in there. We meet our main cast. We meet perhaps the Acolyte. Yeah, it was beautiful. There's been a million things. We're obviously 2 weeks late to this trailer. You've probably listened to a million things about it at this point, but just fantastic to finally get it. It
looks Lee Jung Jae just crushing.
Seamaster Soul.
Carrie Ann Moss.
Carrie Ann Moss. I know.
Jedi Indara.
How's Carrie Ann Moss not been in a Star Wars yet?
Yeah, right. She just sells like powers, like science fiction fantasy powers, so well. Like anyone who does those kind of scenes can be so difficult for actors, given that they're used to playing against, you know, other actors and people and, you know, playing to emotion. And this is just like kind of believing in a mystical energy. And Matrix is just a testament to her ability to do that. And then this footage was just like astoundingly good because of that sort of experience that she has. And then also what she can bring to the table.
Yeah. Say whatever you want about the last Matrix film, Resurrection. Is that what it's called?
Resurrections. I think. I don't know.
Does anyone remember that movie? Anyway, that's that weird. That's a weird pandemic one.
No. Oh, yeah. That was a pandemic Revolutions that everyone buried.
But I remember watching it and like, apart from everything, like every time she was on screen, I was just like, yep, now I'm tuned back in. Like now I'm dialed back in. And I love Keanu in those movies, but she just had that. She was dialed in, like you said, to that what exactly that movie was. Like she totally got what she was supposed to be doing in that movie. Yeah. I was gonna say too that Carly and I watched this together, and she is super on board for it because she's like, so what do I need to know? I'm like, 100 years before prequels, the end. Yeah. She's like, oh, that's great. Like, and she liked, she really liked the first half of Ahsoka because she felt like I actually didn't need to know a lot of that stuff. And then the second half of Ahsoka really starts leaning in towards knowing about Rebels, right? So it's like second half of that season was a lot of pausing to be like, and then this happened, and then that person. And with this, I'm like, I don't think you need to have anything going in. Like, there's going to be little nuggets for us, but.
I do think this is going to be a summation piece for the High Republic for people that didn't read the High Republic.
Yeah. I want to make a bet on air.
All right.
Sure.
I bet you we hear Nihil exactly 0 times in this series.
I don't know. I think we get it once at least.
I bet you hear it once at least.
Vernestra is going to.
That's my bet.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah. It could be a wink and a nod to the High Republic people. Like Vernestra is just like, no, I've seen some stuff, because what I really would like this discussion to be about is the interview with Leslie Headland that I think it was StarWars.com talking about like how, you know, creating this thing and what are her influences and who are her mentors and, you know, what's her background, because we haven't really got this in depth about her before. But I think there's a lot in there that's going to talk about this, but I think she's, you know, it's on StarWars.com. If you haven't read it, I suggest you read it. It was the best read I've had of 2024 as far as Star Wars lore. There's a million like great nuggets, but like to this point, I think she was like, you know, like there's always Star Wars has been about like the rebels versus the establishment. But in this piece, the Jedi are the establishment. And, you know, that is wild, but that's also kind of, I don't know.
They're functioning almost as the Empire. They're like the major institution, the authoritarian institution is sort of safeguarding the Republic and thus creating obstacles, checkpoints, things like that for people in the galaxy.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that they're bad or corrupt or anything like that. It just means like, it makes sense why you would at this time period invert your focus to the Sith, right? Like if you're doing the Star Wars storytelling, You have to talk about the rebels or the smaller group of people fighting the larger thing in power. Right. Well, you know, so it just makes a ton of sense.
I mean, we have to assume that the Jedi finally vanquish the Nihil, even though we haven't gotten there yet in the High Republic. But, you know, and so maybe they are a little high on their horse after that. Probably a little bit humbled. They should be humbled because they are humbled right now in the High Republic. But they are the dominant force in the galaxy, and maybe enough times passed that, you know, there are some, there's some teenagers that are angsty and they need to rebel against the establishment, and that's what it is. It's the Jedi rule, unattacked. I can't even talk.
Right, but they're looking a little closer to prequel era Jedi than High Republic in some ways, because like the first scene we open up on is they're in Coruscant, they're in the Jedi Temple in Coruscant training younglings, right? Which is super prequel feels, right? This idea that we've collapsed ranks back to the you know, the center of the galaxy, or the economic center of the galaxy. Yeah.
It also gave like Rise of the Red Blade feels, like, you know, one, you know, youngling was like, you know, what do you see? And like one's like balance and one's like light, and then one's like fire.
fire.
And that, you know, that's very much Rise of the Red Blade. It's like, well, what do I do with these emotions now that I'm feeling them? You know, who's here to help me?
Yeah.
Who's here to shepherd me? Like, what's going on? I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. And that might tie into sort of the Acolyte and that character and the journey that someone's going on as someone who's with the dark side and sort of learning from someone in the dark side of the Force and sort of what that unlocks with your emotions or what emotions you have going into that and why that's a path for you and things like that. That stuff's so interesting that we kind of don't explore it with any nuance in Star Wars. It's a lot of like, they immediately fall to the dark side. They're immediately a Dark Lord archetype. And it doesn't really get into the emotional kind of capacities and spectrum of emotion and stuff that I think talked about the Jedi or, you know,
the seduction of the dark side, right? Like that part's always been talked about in the movies, but like, I want to, and I don't mean sexual, but like, I want to see a seduction, right? Yeah. Like, I want to see why the dark side is so seducing in a longer form.
I mean, based on this and based on Rise of the Red Blade, it's like something that comes from internally. It's like, this is what feels natural to me. So why am I supposed to resist it? You know, a lot of great stuff like that. There's, this article's so great. I'm going to just read one paragraph, if that's okay, from this thing, because it sums up pretty much how I feel about Star Wars. So like, you know, I guess the imright.com click, this worked for me, but, you know, this is what it is. This is Leslie Headland. So the creator of the newest Star Wars live action series first discovered the galaxy far, far away as a teenager watching the special editions on the big screen and immersing yourself in the expanded universe of books like Timothy Zahn's Heir to the Empire, which we just reviewed a month ago, I think. I think it just meant so much to me because it was a place to live, a place to escape to, Headland says. Not just the media, but George Lucas had given you enough signposts that it's almost like Narnia. You could just go into the Star Wars galaxy and live there. And then you just have to come out of the wardrobe at some point and go to class. And like, that's why I love this podcast so much, because I get to go into the proverbial wardrobe with you guys and like just be in the galaxy and just talk about the galaxy and just, and then think about the space and flesh out the space with our conjoined minds, and it's so fun.
No, agreed. Like, as a similar as a kid who escaped into books constantly, you know, I have three memories of escaping into books, and those book is Narnia when I was younger. I remember reading Narnia and really just being engrossed by that and feeling like I was there and I didn't. And the second was reading The Gunslinger in fifth grade.
That was a big one for me, though I think I was like 14, but okay.
That's the better age to read it, but seventh grade.
Okay.
It wasn't quite fifth grade, seventh grade. A little better, but still. And then the third is, and I've talked about in this book, is literally reading Heir to the Empire in the back of the car going on vacation. And that scene where I can still remember, we read it, and I can remember the scene where Luke has to use his robot hand to break out of the jail cell. Yeah. And like this moment of just expanding the universe of like, oh my God, that's right. He has a bionic hand and he can use that as a tool. Like just this like mind blowing. Oh, you can expand right on the things in the films. Anyway, so I love that quote because I can completely relate to that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's incredible. I had a very similar experience with Zahn's Outbound Flight when I read that book for the first time. Mm-hmm. I was just lost in that book. And Zahn has that effect. I think a lot of his writing is just so good. When you're young, you're kind of like blown away by the detail.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm not seeing in this article, but I remember reading the first time, or it might have been a different article, was that Leslie Headland has talked a lot with Rian Johnson, Grant.
Whoa. Well, why is that directed to my?
Oh, no reason. Just, I don't know. But no, like she says, like, you know, she's really leaned on Rian as a mentor in going into the galaxy far, far away. And I thought that was really cool. And, you know, I mean, she's, you know, the title of this article is that, like, whatever you think the series is going to be, it's not. Or whatever you think the Acolyte is,
we heard a very similar statement from our guy,
Rian,
RJ,
for
TLJ, yeah.
Right. And it was like, that was almost his, like...
Very exciting. Yeah.
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 I do wonder. I mean, at the very end of this trailer, we do see a hand catching a red lightsaber. I think this is the nugget that I think a lot of us want to maybe discuss, yeah, because I think this will be where the major sort of lore expansion comes with this story.
Yeah.
Who is this character? Who is this Dark Lord archetype in this story? What nuance do they bring? What commentary do they bring to the story? And sort of, is it going to be canonical, or is it going to be kind of recontextualized canon and sort of explore maybe new avenues rather than sort of play into legacy novels, play into sort of like a typical sort of Dark Lords conspiring to take over stuff, and more of just like dealing with emotion, dealing with the binary of the Force and the yin and yang of it all, and the kind of spectrum of emotion like we talked about earlier, and sort of the ambiguity and sort of the exploration of the self and the journey of the self and stuff like that, that The Last Jedi does so well, honestly, like in such a great way, fundamentally, is sort of like activating yourself, this sort of coming of age, this sort of mythological hero's journey sort of stuff that I think Ryan did so well in his movie that I think she's going to capitalize on in this and sort of explore Star Wars and deconstruct it in a major way and comment on the Jedi. Maybe it's sort of critical commentary on the Jedi in terms of them, you know, taking young children, indoctrinating them into this religion, and then sort of like making a sort of community that's devoid of attachment, which is so dangerous, honestly, and so strange that is sort of part of their dogma. And I think that will be something that maybe is explored. And then also what happens with trauma, tragedy, you know, all that sort of stuff within the Jedi ranks. This girl saying fire in the beginning of the trailer. What does that mean? Like,
yeah,
what do we do when people are suffering or struggling? You know, they need sort of maybe it's about, it could just really be about mental health, honestly, in a major way. Yeah. I think really this might just be about mental health, honestly, this journey. And that's huge.
Which is, yeah, we haven't gotten something like that before. Right. And that's an avenue that makes sense. Yeah. I was thinking about this last scene, with the red saber that we see. And, I had a thought, and then Jason just commented online.
Yeah. Wait, can I say my theory before we go? Okay. My theory is that, you know, for all the legacy, you know, legends heads out there, like we all know that they're Darth Plagueis, you know, that this is a name we've all heard. I mean, except for Lawrence Kasdan, but we've all heard this name, know this character. This was supposedly the character that trained Palpatine in, you know, what you could think of as the legends or the canon, the old canon, essentially. And then there's also he has a master that's illustrated and depicted pretty heavily in the books as well. Yeah. And I just think those two characters are just a tad bit like goofy, almost like those two characters, just the kind of the eye line for Darth Plagueis would be hard to do cinematically with motion picture language, given he's so tall. Like it'd be like almost a Kaminoan sort of situation where it would feel otherworldly and scary. But and then Darth Tenebris is a Bith, and we know the only Biths we've seen thus far have been musicians, and you know, it would be a fun sort of like a depiction of a Bith in a new way. But at the same time, like
it'd be a tough pill to swallow,
kind of a comical kind of like, you know, insectoid like appearance. And I'm just thinking, if we really want to re-canonize the Sith in a fun way, I think it might, and also be able to investigate the exact same threads that Rian Johnson was investigating, which is sort of like bloodlines and legacy and lineage, and if that makes you powerful, or if you can be someone from nowhere, and if you can be powerful no matter what your backstory is, or you know where your origin happens to be, but and you make this character a Sith, like the actual Sith species from the old legends, from the Dark Horse comics, from the Tales of the Jedi comics, from the SWTOR games, from, you know, like you've seen these characters all over the place. They're kind of been written out of history, written out of the new canon. I think there's one in, I think you see one in the comics, the recent comics, actually. There's one in the background, which is great. Like they're still around, which is awesome. And I think a cool way to sort of do this Sith in hiding story might be the whole bloodline storyline, essentially. The sort of like last of a dying, you know, species that believes their species has this almost entitled power over the Force, and that they have more power than other people based on their connection to the ancient ways of the Force and the dark side, or whatever, the ancient Sith eternal, if you will, you know? And so, like, to me, it, like, a cool way maybe to reintroduce the Sith, I think, would be to actually maybe bring in a sort of bloodline tale, a tale of a last of a bloodline type character that is a Skywalker-esque almost stand-in, but inverted again, inverted,
right?
You know, right? Yeah, yeah. Another major inversion that's essentially a Dark Lord that is happens to be like a Skywalker, essentially.
Right, but like character. Parallel to maybe the actual like Sith line, you know, like not like, oh, we need to reclaim our mantle of the Sith because, you know, we're a long line of, you know.
Because the Darth stuff feels so arcane and like from another time, right? Yeah. Almost like,
I mean, I have a practical reason to not want it to be Darth Tenebris or Darth Plagueis. And I have to give credit where it's credit's due. I never look at any other Star Wars stuff just because I want to have a fresh look at it with y'all and not have like other people's words in there. But I did Star Wars Explained is actually a great pod. Yeah. It's a video pod. It's on YouTube. They're great. I watched it and he just, I was like, oh, I'll never be able to unforget this. So I want to give credit where credit's due. I may have arrived at this or not, or maybe not, but he, you know, he said like, it'd be kind of lame to have Tenebris. Well, he said, first of all, he did the math and Plagueis would be about 14 when this is coming out. Like probably around 14 years old. So like kind of too young to be Plagueis. So Tenebris is a logical person to be the like lead Sith, but
right.
He's like, it would just be lame to have one of those two be it, because then it like takes all the like tension out of the thing, because you know they live. And it's like, you know, like you want to have a new combatant and something like that. So, I mean, I would love to marry those two theories together, Grant, and be like, yes, there's it, you know, there is this species. I love this idea.
We've as been much as I want for weeks Sith now. Bith.
I'd love a Sith Bith, you know.
Which I do. I want it.
Also,
I mean, last episode, Sith Bith, yes, that's what I want.
Yeah.
But, you know, but like, yeah, this is like.
You basically get maker status if you make it a Sith Bith. You basically are like, oh, well, you should tell Star Wars stories till the end of time, because you essentially honored like deep legends canon and then also paid it forward.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's in this article too with Leslie. She loves legends and she loves all this stuff. We've been ignoring Jason for too long. And then Adam, of course, you have something to say.
I'll bring it in. I just want to finish this idea of like, I don't think it's an either or situation. We still might get a Sith Bith, just not the one using the lightsaber. I mean, because the thing is, like, I agree they're kind of goofy, but I think if you mangle it up,
it's mainly because it's just a giant prosthetic
horrific,
like head.
You make it horrific enough, like you can make it pretty scary. You could actually make it to the point that people don't recognize that's a Bith very easily, right? Like if you give him the vocoder and all the other stuff.
That's right, because Tenebris is pretty threatening with the vocoder.
It's pretty threatening when you see the illustrations.
Yeah, you always have the mask.
But I agree. Yeah, I agree. I'm just not expecting it. The other thing is just like, why are we assuming it's a Sith? Right? Like just a red lightsaber makes a Sith not, or trying to speak, you know, does not make a Sith necessarily, right? So it's definitely a dark side user. It might honestly be as straightforward as that is the Acolyte, right? It might be like if we're using Occam's razor, right? So, but part of the issue is a lot of what's going around the web is just like, well, a lot of people talk about not seeing Sith or not seeing, and that's the other thing that gets you through this thing of like the Jedi haven't seen a Sith in so many thousands of years.
The Caddy Mundi phrase that you have to actually honor.
Caddy Mundi putting us in a corner.
Caddy Mundi put a millennia
between. You have two options. And this brings Jason into this conversation, brings two options. Option one is that's not a Sith. It's a dark side user who found a Sith lightsaber.
Or made a Sith lightsaber. Dagon Gera
made one.
Dagon Gera made one. He wasn't a Sith, right?
Right. Or every single one of those people that we saw have to die in that confrontation.
Yeah.
Those are your two options.
Yeah.
Those are your two options. And that's Jason's just like the pretty dark, but he says it's pretty dark, but logical to maintain continuity is anyone who meets the acolyte probably has to die. If they identify themselves as an acolyte, as a Sith, if this just seem as a dark, I mean, we've seen dark side users seen that happening. We can still do that.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like they got their butt kicked in the trailer, you know, off of one like force blast. Yeah. Like, and I don't remember any familiar faces.
So you're
faces.
Saying that, that you're saying that this killer would have to be covering their tracks by possibly killing Jedi to keep their identity unknown? Like, yes. I think they state that yeah. happening in the trailer. Yeah.
That's going to happen, but that is like, that's six pre, there's pretty main characters in that lineup. Like, that's going to be, that's going to be a butchering. Like, I don't know if you're going to get that.
That would be amazing.
I mean, please.
So this is essentially a murder mystery. How do we feel about that? That's what's well, that's what
I was just about to say. That this article calls it a mystery thriller. So like yeah, mystery meets like like horror movie. Like right, let me just double check. Hear our, yeah, mystery thriller.
One of her favorite movies. So
yeah.
Yeah. That's gonna be
also explains why maybe you're talking to Rian Johnson. You might be talking to him less about honestly less about Star Wars and more about
Agatha Christie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's definitely some Jedi's who are being murdered. There's gonna be crime scenes, there's gonna be investigations.
For sure.
I have to imagine but like again, it's so much of Star Wars is like someone catches a red lightsaber, it's not a Sith. It's so much of Star Wars is to just rug pull just to rug pull. Yeah. I don't like that personally. I think Disney needs to
it's a trailer
Sith at some point. They should commit. Like, I don't understand when you commit to the Sith, because the Sith is the next frontier of Star Wars storytelling, in my opinion. Is
you gotta go way back in the past.
Have to be addressed. What better than to address a very ancient Sith now who's the last of a dying race? Or I guess the last of a dying race, and then that sets up maybe the ancient context for them. It can then go back. You know what I mean? Like to me,
I love
that's perfect. To me, that's perfect. I don't want it now that I've thought of it because I want this to be unexpected. But I'm just saying, like something of that nature would be fantastic.
I mean,
to me,
great. Even if they gave you that, wouldn't you have said that was unexpected? Because there's no reason to expect them to do it, right? Like it's like I know I said it, but I wasn't expecting them to actually do it. No, but here's the thing, like. I love this. I really do. And as a person who read all those comics, and I do love the ancient Sith like species, and I wanted to bring that back. But like, here's my thought is you cannot. I mean,
but the commentary was bad when they wrote about it. Like, it didn't really deconstruct the flaws of being so self-absorbed about your power and eugenics and the darkness and the evil essentially that your people had are committing. Like it didn't get into the, you know, why that's all bad essentially. It just was like hierarchy and power and almost Game of Thronesian in a lot of ways where it was just kind of grim and relishing it in it. And I was
like, also
no, it needs to actually comment on why this is bad. You know what I mean? Like why trying to the bloodlines and managing lineages and things like that is evil and bad.
That was the 90s, right? That was exactly happening in the 90s. Comic books, the 90s, the comic books in the 90s were wild with that's like the era of like
there was some
Lightfield and all that stuff where it was just like the grimmer the better, the more power the better.
Metal,
Age of Metal, big and so many pockets. Ben's back. We can start talking about
comics. Get out of Marvel.
But what I was gonna say is the interesting thing is like, so what I'm thinking about is if you do this other logical conclusion that like they do kill all the Jedi. Okay, now I'm getting like real into like murder things now. Well, I guess it's a murder mystery. It's like, you then have to disappear all the bodies because if the Jedi found out six other Jedi were killed via lightsaber wounds,
I mean,
they'd probably be like, Sith? Like, are the Sith back? Like, we lost
after 1,000 years, though, or 900 years in this case.
But like, what else would you think killed them with a lightsaber?
Does a Jedi fade into the Force in this show?
Fade into the Force?
Is that a revelation in the later episodes of this initial season or something.
We don't know what happens end game High Republic. We think, I mean, listen, you can be a dark Jedi without being a Sith. You can be a...
No, I'm saying when you die as a Jedi, when do you sort of just fall into your robes and sort of disappear? Like, at what point do they discover that that is what that can happen?
Qui-Gon? Post-Qui-Gon?
Essentially Qui-Gon. But
it's Obi-Wan,
as a storyteller,
really, was the first one.
I really...
Right, it was that...
Qui-Gon was cremated.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't really...
Obi-Wan
like,
was the first.
I mean, everyone went into the Force, but it was like... It seemed like the people that went cognizantly into the Force had their robes disappear. I mean, we're in weird territory right now.
I don't know.
I mean, because
yeah,
Ben
who,
Solo,
who was first
like,
to become one?
I don't know. But I mean, I know they burned Qui-Gon.
Let's not bring Ben Solo into this conversation.
well, listen, yeah. Why not? We burned.
We're going to the past. We're going in the past. We're not, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying Ben. Yeah, Qui-Gon Jinn was cremated. Yeah. Like, he was on a pyre, and, like, I don't know that anything disappeared there. There was nothing shown.
Well, he also was... you're right. That's the weird thing. Like, he was straight up murdered. So, like, I feel like part of that is, like, he didn't have time to do it. Obi-Wan had that moment of, like, of actual, like, here I go.
Right.
You know? And then...
So do we like, think in this show that
that's the canonical sound they make.
Yeah, I want to, like, overdub you being like, here I go. Whoop! Like over that scene.
I feel like whenever Ben or I leave a chat or something, like, we always put the Vader stomping on the robes like gif at all times. on a quick draw.
Oh man.
It's so it's like
complete, yeah, so and then actually. Same thing, like I'm trying to think of all the people that we've seen become one of the Force. Leia does, right? But Leia's also given time.
Yeah, I mean, everything
right,
post Obi-Wan.
Can I say there's a 100% chance that one Jedi fades away in this series?
Sure.
All the other ones die. Like, there are bodies, but ooh, like, one will fade. Like,
Interesting. When no one else sees it, like, so no one, you could do it.
Wait, is that where you guys are right now? It's just like, well, if they're all murdered, but they all disappear, how do you have any bodies to investigate? You're such like a
what will
no I
part of the
no.
murder like so, to like if he disappears or she disappears or you know they disappear it changes how the murder mystery operates,
right? Because
like,
CSI like, so doesn't exist.
Murder mystery in Star Wars, you could, there's so
yeah,
many
CSI
ways the Force can kind of interact with that murder mystery,
but that's you hit on something that's really interesting, Grant, because let's say it happens, I don't know why I'm saying six, but it looks like there's like around six Jedi in
I would have said 12
maybe the whatever
tree line, when they're looking at the woods there's like eight. So I was like,
all right, well, okay, so I love how Grant, I'm gonna take the exact middle fine, so there's eight, but let's say that like so they slaughter it they're the Sith or whatever, slaughters all eight, realizes I gotta get rid of the bodies, like I gotta hide the evidence, right? It goes around collecting bodies. I mean, you can't do this on television, it's so dark, but you're doing this and then comes across one set of robes where there's no body. Like that would be kind of like amazing, right? To be the Sith is the only one who ever saw like evidence of becoming one with the Force.
Yeah,
right, like this is like
dude, yes, like, yes. This is, we're breaking the story right now. We shouldn't be, but like, yes, like, oh my God. Like that's so interesting because it's also the basis of a lot of great pulp science fiction novels, like the Giants of Ganymede and stuff, where it's like, you don't find a body, you find like the robes, right? Like it's like instantly the most compelling part of the murder mystery is like, you don't find enough evidence that you need to find the Sith because you've just found robes, but maybe this was a Jedi who's just well attuned to the Force.
But then the Sith is obsessed with this fact that, like, what happened, how they become one with the Force, and then,
life,
like,
and, like,
passed
did the,
out
did the Jedi achieve eternal life through this, whatever they do here?
Yeah. Right. It almost
domino effect. Yeah.
You guys are deep down the rabbit hole. I love it. I just fact checked it in, I count eight lightsabers. So yes, Grant was right.
Grant was spot on.
Spot
well
on.
Done.
I mean, I mean, this was another thing I picked up on Star Wars Explained, but he was just like, you know, like there is evidence. It's just because you're holding a red lightsaber doesn't mean you're a Sith.
Okay. All right.
There's plenty of precedence.
I'm saying is Disney's going to have to play the Sith card in the next 5 years. And what better than to start with the Acolyte as sort of like a, you know,
just a tease.
But it's like, Tenebris exists. I mean, they can retcon Tenebris, which would carve my heart out of my chest. But
well, all I'm saying is we're going to hear about stories and tales of Sith in the bygone eras of the Sith and the ages past, yeah, and all that sort of stuff. At some point in the show, I guarantee you 100% that the Acolyte is going to hear something about the Sith struggle and how that pertains to her own struggle and what's going on.
I would not be surprised. I think we're going to get the mirror image of lore, right? We're going to get a lot of Sith lore drops that are references and little comments that they could build upon. Like,
I hope so.
Again,
I mean, so I think
we're not talking about, like, you're not going to get the whole thing here.
No, but enough to be like, it's the same thing. Like, they're going to mention whatever this, you know, the thing that sparked all of us when he said, you know, I fought with your father in the Clone Wars, right? Like, that's just like, you're gonna get little lines like that that you're like, tell me more. And then in 5 years there's gonna be a Sith show that takes place, well,
what's,
you know,
so
5,000 years
is,
or whatever.
I had this thought the other day, actually. It's probably unrelated to what we're talking about, but the Inquisitorious, like, they're brothers and sisters, and we know that the Sith Brotherhood existed in the old canon, the old legends, you know, like, did the Sith once have that exact same system of, like, you know, numbered brothers and sisters, essentially?
But into the thousands?
But into the thousands, essentially. And is that almost like mimicking? Is the story group and everyone who's involved with Rebels and Dave Filoni, are they really kind of snuck a really fun idea into the canon that is... that actually might play again if we do go back into the past and explore the Sith?
Was the Sith Wars, the Sith Empire,
like the Inquisitorious, essentially? Like, and
the Inquisitorious is like a mini Sith Empire.
Yeah, because I know it was like the Sith Empire, and then there's the Sith Brotherhood or whatever in the Legends comics or whatever. Yeah.
Okay,
and to me, I was just like, well, there's kind of a male, you know, centric thing to just calling it the Brotherhood. I don't like that. I think that I like that there's sisters and brothers and how the Inquisitorious operates. And I'm hoping that they rename it, but they also sort of like mirror the Inquisitorious. That would be so cool to me as like a fan. I'd be like, wow, that's so cool. Like, Palpatine set this up because he knew about the ancient Sith, essentially.
Which would, right? Like, he is well-read. Yeah. And so, like, it makes sense that the Inquisitorious comes from before or is mirroring it. And the other thing is, like, from the behind-the-scenes blah, blah thing that I always do with my brain standpoint, it makes sense because you did reintroduce them in Obi-Wan. So there is that idea of the, you know, like, live action. Like, I always try to look through my wife's eyes. Like, my wife is now aware of the Inquisitorious.
Yeah.
Great word. Great.
Which is so wild. Weird to me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it could be true. You know, when we saw it looked on Exegol, there were a bunch of acolytes and like Sith, you know, Sith Eternal cultists and stuff. Like, yes, there are main Sith, but it's like, is there a sub level that's existing? And is that what's going on? And it could be like them or these cultists or religious members. You know, if you played Force Unleashed, it's like there were all these acolytes and all these cultists that were, you know, force wielders and, you know, swung red lightsabers. Yeah. Like, is she going to go that way? You know, Leslie, like,
we'll talk about,
like, I think she's going to canonize some wild stuff.
I think the thing we haven't seen yet is that we haven't seen someone.
Bothans. What?
Yes, that is like number one. That's actually like
season two. Don't worry about
every
it.
List we present of most desired things to see in Star Wars. I think Bothans is like either one or two. But
right, I think you should have top 10 lists every week, and number one is always Bothans, no matter what.
Like Gary Oldman is a Bothan. You know, let's go.
Done.
I love it.
Hand out the Emmy, the Golden Globe.
By the way, not motion capture. Yeah. Just make him up like a.
Yeah.
What we haven't seen before is the Jedis are just the villains of the story, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, we might be getting that.
Yeah. And for me, I think that's what I think this is in a lot of ways. And I have to think that, like, villains per se, they're villainous.
No, but antagonists, right? Antagonists, right? Like
you have to Save the Cat with the person you're following, who I imagine is the lead actress playing the titular sort of acolyte character, May. And I think that Save the Cat moment might be her abandonment. Like, a Jedi might be so fearful that they abandon her to, like, the darkness that's whatever's... And then sort of like an abandonment, honestly. Like,
Well, which makes sense. You want to empathize and sympathize with that character, right? And so in order to do that, if she's against the Jedi, you have to at least understand her negative views towards the Jedi, right? You and to some extent go along with it, right? And that makes sense. If you're going with that, I mean, that's always what we talk about. I you know, it's easy to sit there and kind of critique the Jedi and go against them. But I've always had this interesting discussion internally about the methods they use, right, to take kids away from parents. And I'm going to put them in a better situation and take them out of worse things and train them. And I was going to make an analogy that didn't seem – I'm going to drop it because I'm like, that's probably not very thoughtful. And also make it a bit extreme. But it's been on my
– Moving
been
on.
My, it's been – I'll just – I'll just say this, it's been on my mind because of watching the Reservation Dogs series. And I will say the one thing I thought of were, I'm going to use the term because that's what they call it, but the Indian boarding schools where they took Native American children out of the tribe, put them there and basically taught them English and tried to, for their own good.
Convert them to Catholicism, now, the whole nine.
Yeah. Right. Now again.
Yeah.
Extreme, not anywhere near the same thing, right? Because but like, you know, you kind of think about that. If you frame it that way from this character's mentality or standpoint, there's something there, right?
Like, I mean, Grant, I wanted to talk to you about this because I know this is stuck in your craw for months now. It's just like you wanted to see you wanted the Jedi to have a moment where it was like, you know what, like the Jedi doctrine was right. It was like, yes, this all happened and they were fooled.
I think in 10 years, in all the Star Wars stories that take place therein, the Jedi will be a net positive faction.
Right. No yes.
What that's
in any story that takes place. So that's all I'm saying. All I'm saying.
Yeah. But it's not going to happen in this series, though, right?
I wonder, you know, I think we could do a wonderful, you know, Atlantic, you know, New Yorker article about that, or of like, is it worth sort of deconstructing the puzzle of an organization that will ultimately be viewed as heroic at the end of the day. I wonder, because I almost wonder if this is just a fairy tale where these are just the good, you know, knights protecting the realm. And I wonder if we're just trying to make it more than that. And I don't know. And then when we do try to then do religious commentary on Star Wars, it's so mild that
I can't
do this. Like, it's just, if you don't want to go all in, I don't think we should just broach the surface level details of this stuff. We should actually go into sort of like, you know, just sort of like religious sort of ideologies and how they can, you know, be misaligned and cause, you know, corrupt actions and cause wars and cause death and cause tribalism and cause, you know, famine and destruction and really get into maybe like, you know, the basically faith and religion and talk about the Sith and talk about, I always thought the sequels would be all about sort of like something rising up around Luke Skywalker and then what that, like deconstructing that thing. And I was like, this is what Star Wars could have been in a lot of ways, is sort of this big time religious commentary.
To have a fanaticism surrounding Luke would have been an amazing way to tell stories, which I mean, to be honest, that is not out of the realm of possibilities.
It like, still that, happen.
That is something they still could do this. We could do that, especially with
who,
but imagine if you, but imagine if you did this still around Luke. There's super interesting commentary on the Star Wars fan base as well.
Yeah.
Because imagine if part of it is you have this cultish surrounding the legend of Luke Skywalker, who is now dead and can't speak for himself, which is, by the way, it's like religious commentary.
Sure.
And then you have Rey having to deal with fighting these cultish Luke followers.
Yeah, you could do it.
like imagine that.
Yeah, you
like,
could that's, do it.
Yeah. And you have the whole scale of the galaxy, which I am going to be galaxy size police. Like, it needs to always be bigger. Like, it needs to always feel bigger.
But like, it seems as if no one's heard of Luke, and then like the one lady in the desert heard Rey say her last name was Skywalker, and then like that's about it. Like, it doesn't seem like.
Well, and also her response seems to be like, okay.
No
cool.
one on Pasana was like wearing a Luke t-shirt. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, there could be Luke cultists enveloping 20 planets in the galaxy, and it's like
a thing that we kind of build into the canon,
in 3 million systems, like 20 planets doesn't mean anything, but it's like still 20 planets versus cultists, so it's significant.
Well, this is the sort of commentary that I think Star Wars is best to handle. Like, we did a lot of trade politics and taxation routes and all that sort of stuff in the prequels.
Yep.
I think now
we've done war commentary, we've done government commentary.
Yes, we already got that in. I think it's now religious commentary that needs to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. And for me, it's like, for me, Star Wars was inherently Buddhist, and I thought that I always thought Rey would have been a reincarnated almost character or something, and I thought they would pay it back to sort of those roots and pay tribute to Buddhism and do the whole thing essentially instead of just taking bits and pieces. Right. And there's lots of it.
Star Wars is good at anything; it's retconning things. So never say never.
Yeah.
I love that, man. You've talked about that for a long time. Dune does it quite often.
If you read the books, it's like the Letos all think they're the same Leto or whatever. It's like
or the Bene Gesserit having all the minds, all the memories inside their brain.
You don't have to, it doesn't take a lot of work to do. It doesn't rob their dimensions either at all. I just don't believe that at all.
But think about this. So now in the Rey movie, you have her going around calling herself Rey Skywalker, right? Which is raising the name of Skywalker back up into the consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So and probably I would guess she's talking a lot about Luke because that's her father figure, her mentor. And then suddenly you have Luke truthers.
Right? I am picking up what you're putting down. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right now. Like,
because this is auto green light. Commentary on fan base, on toxicity.
It actually talks about toxicity and obsession and parasocial obsession and sort of misguided faith, bad faith, essentially. And just the power of the people's willingness to fool themselves. And that being so fascinating, people basically cling to this because they're afraid, essentially, of whatever. Maybe the galaxy is running amok and the government's not fully formed yet or reforming essentially after Hosnian Prime, and therefore there's the power vacuum and lots of crime and the syndicates have risen back up and things like that. People are afraid, therefore people cling to religions and they cling
religion and their religion knowing they know the true truth.
Right. It makes sense. It's actually perfect. So what the things you're setting up here are actually make a lot of sense to me, and I thought the sequels were going to be kind of about that.
Right on.
But sequels could be, and that's really really inspiring and cool. But again, what you're saying with maybe what this show is doing and why Leslie Headland says it's so unexpected is because maybe it will be tackling a lot of these really deep themes and this commentary that we've all just been discussing for the last 15 minutes. Like, we really, it's almost untapped, right? It's sitting there. Yeah. It's just super untapped. And George, in many, many interviews, has said, I created Star Wars as a method or means to comment on religion because it's so charged to talk about any religion, any real world religion. And so to do that in a science fiction space, is in a space fantasy space, is so therapeutic and cathartic for society. And I think like we're really missing the ball if we're not getting there at some point. Yeah. And I don't know. So
I just have to say, I hope I am surprised. I hope this is not what we've been talking about. And, you know, we pride ourselves on taking all the angles, right? We look at this as deep as we can. Yeah, and I love where you guys have gone. I mean, things I have not thought about at all, and that's why I love this podcast. And you know, you just went right down there, and we'll see. You know, we'll see. Like,
well, I mean,
Rian Johnson did surprise us in a lot of ways. Like, he paid an homage to what came before, and then he pushed it in new directions, and it was surprising at every turn. So, I think Leslie may aspire to that, and we'll see how it goes. Like, hopefully, it is. One thing I super love about her, and I know this is very, not like superficial is the word I'm looking for. It's superficial, but as soon as she got the gig, she got a tattoo on her writing hand of Ralph McQuarrie's concept art for Princess Leia. Hardcore. Nice. That is so hardcore. That's and I'm great. Like, all right, let's go. Let's go.
That's... It's also ballsy considering how many people fall off of Star Wars projects. So like she must have been real certain, but that's part of it is like she was real certain about the vision she had and making sure her vision was seen, right? And completed. To be like, cause imagine if she got that gig, things went south like
everyone else. I mean, like, Gareth Edwards like had Tony Gilroy punch him up and like, you know, the Lego brothers like got their thing, you know, take it away from them, and like, you know, it could have happened to any of them.
Yeah. or Chris Trevor.
The ground is paved with the names of high profile directors that have just been like fired by Kathleen.
And then having to look at your writing hand like every day.
Listen,
for the rest of your life,
I learned this. At a very big institution, I learned this thing that was like the people that succeed, blast doors are for other people. The real ones find their way through the blast doors. And Leslie's just like, I'm going to be that person. Like, it doesn't matter. This is going to work.
No, it just shows her confidence in it, right? Which is key. And I love that. About, like, that's so exciting.
Yes.
She, much like me, got her start with Star Wars from the special editions. That's where she jumped in, and that's where I jumped in. And I saw the special editions in theaters. And
it's also which is great. Like again, in a lot of ways, like seeing him in the theater is more legit than anything I've ever done. Right, my way was fully on ABC Sunday night movie special, interrupted.
Man, I remember when those came out. My brother and I were like so stoked. We just like ran out. Nice. We saw them all, and it was like,
They were in theaters, and then the VHSs came out, and the gold cases. I still remember them.
I think I still have them somewhere up in my attic.
Yep, they're beautiful VHS cases.
I mean, I ran them out when I was working in the video store because I literally would play.
Right? Yeah, you literally did. Yeah,
not even kidding. Yeah, literally, that's all I was ever playing. Like, the mini docs at the very beginning of those are the things that like I remember most. Yeah. Of George Lucas talking about the colors of all the movies. Like talking about like, well, it was great.
I love when he gets real upstream.
Yellow and then green and
yeah.
I mean, should we also? I mean, who knows what's gonna happen? We should let our listeners know we're doing the May 4th.
Man. Marathon,
24-hour marathon.
I'm so excited about this.
I'm gonna try and finish some Star Wars Unlimited before, and then do that in the evening. Or what are we doing that all day? Is that essentially an all day?
It's overnight. It's a red eye.
Overnight. Okay.
It's 8 to 8.
That's incredible.
8 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Star Wars filled day. Just
24 hours of popcorn and Star Wars. I mean.
Also, Grant, bring your Unlimited because there's going to be breaks between movies, other Star Wars nerds there. I'm sure you can break into an Unlimited game with people. I'm sure other people have brought their Unlimited cards.
I've already taken part in many games so far. It's so much fun.
Nice.
I love this card
game. I do the Best Picture Showcase, the Best Picture Marathon, and the amount of just movie nerddom that happens there is amazing. And I cannot imagine... Again, it's not just going to be us. We're going to be in a theater full of people who decided to watch 24 hours of Star Wars. These are our people.
Like, we should get more koozies.
So loud in the theaters, though. I feel bad. Like, we are going to be raving. I will.
I'm so excited. I think I'm most excited about seeing the prequels in again. Isn't that weird? Isn't that interesting? Like, I think that's what I'm most excited about. I don't know why.
I mean, I love the prequels, man. And the Phantom Menace warms my heart. But like, I'm there for A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back.
It's
going to happen at 8 in the morning.
A New Hope is going to be really special for me because I did not see that one in a
I texted a little bit, but I'm going to cry so hard at episode 9. And it's not because necessarily like it makes me cry, but there are so many cry moments in episode 9, and then you add sleep deprivation and 24 hours of watching it. Like when they say there are more of us than they are them, you're gonna hear active man sobbing next to you.
Yeah.
Like, not even be quiet. It's gonna be like soul shaking, deep breaths.
You're saying you're excited for 9. I just need to be there for it. Just to see what really
happens. I'm excited to watch 9 after having not slept for probably 36 hours.
I'm gonna have to sleep leading up. All right, we're getting
that movie is like a fever dream, so it's perfect that we see it over
hour and a half. All right,
mental capacity is spent.
All right,
but we'll have to do just real quick. We'll have to do something with the pod. Maybe we could do some quick video posts.
I think A New Hope reaction, New Hope in theaters
on our little reactions on our phones and post it up.
Turns out New Hope, good movie.
It's just tears. It's like I just saw.
Yeah. All right. We'll figure it out. I don't want to do a bad batch of disservice. I could speak for 2 hours just on this article because I'm Hedlund is a real G.
We're excited for the Acolyte. We're excited for this show.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure you've been talking about it. But, yo, like, Bad Batch has taken a jump.
Let's go to bad territory right now. Let's
bad territory. So, again, we're two episodes behind on this. So if you saw last week's episode, good for you. And I don't know what coverage is going on at Bad Batch, but here we are. We're here for this because, like I love Bad Batch, but I've been sort of mid on it coming in. I'm like, okay. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's where I am in my headspace. I don't know. But like this bad territory was like, okay, I'm back. I'm like, let's go. Let's do some things. It just like the vibe of this was such a good episode. So this is last week's episode 8. Bad territory. They're trying to figure out what an M count is.
What is M count?
Like, what is is this an M count?
Is this even M count?
Can I? Okay, since we're talking M count, we're gonna treat these two episodes separately. But I got to do it now. So they like M count. Okay, and I was literally watching the next episode, and we'll talk about it. But they're like, are they allergic to the word midichlorian? Are they never gonna say midichlorian? And then finally, someone says midichlorian.
Wait,
I'm like, raise my arms up, my white. Asajj Ventress says midichlorians.
Does she?
I guarantee she does. I watched
she says
it 15
one time,
or,
right?
Well,
she says
an hour after.
Nice.
And I know it because my wife looked at me I was insane because she was watching something and I was watching on my iPad.
Midichlorians!
And I raised my arms. But I'm like, there's midichlorians. And she just went,
once a time.
And she just like stared at me and I'm like, I said, don't worry about it. But I had an amazing reaction out of like, not even I care. I don't particularly like the idea of midichlorians, but like to hear someone finally say it in new canon was kind of amazing.
Of course, it would be a sign.
I'll take midichlorians over M count any day of the week, honestly. But M count is cool because M count target sounds cool when they're like, so you know about the Empire's M-count targets or whatever. And it was like, I haven't done one of those in a long time. Like Fennec Shand.
Yeah. No, she was great.
Fennec Shand.
Yeah.
This is the best Fennec Shand story and like just episode scenario
maybe ever.
Ever. Like, ever. Like going to this crazy like swamp
world.
Can
you imagine how young she is in this?
Yeah.
You imagine how young she is in this? Because she's
She's just after the Clone Wars,
right?
Like just after the Empire.
This is like 39 years before we see her in like Boba Fett or
Well, the problem is Mandalorian. You can't do the cartoon to live action math because if you start doing it with because you do it with her, you have to do it with what's her name, in Mandalorian season 3.
Bo-Katan.
And then your brain just breaks. But no, it's very true.
They have great skincare routines.
Very good. I mean, that's true. It's like we said, it's all about it's all about the back.
Yeah, because Bo-Katan's like 60 in the canon or something. And it's like what?
And Fennec is like similar to
I will say she was so good in this, it almost made me want a Boba Fett season 2. Almost.
Yeah.
She's so good in this, but
I love how quiet she is and how reserved and like confident.
Yeah, it was almost like
quiet.
Where's the Fennec Shand show? Like,
Move that's
over,
a good
Boba?
Question. Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like I could just watch her and her sweet freaking freighter or whatever her starship. Like that thing is awesome. Like her ship is, I think, one of my favorite ship designs.
I'm sorry, you just said Boba Fett and made me think. Dad, we're gonna see Dad Tanwe is here on a big screen again. It's just going to happen in a giant theater.
All right, I'll cry. Attack of the Clones is, I'm not ready for Attack of the Clones. I'm going to be so hyped for that one.
So
hyped. Like that is the one.
Extra gummy for AOTC.
Look at all this, guys. I feel like Attack of the Clones. I feel like I'm high.
Ben, we're going to talk.
I'm going to be loaded for bear, Adam. Don't worry about it.
All right. That may be the time for me to do it.
just such good stuff. There's that going on. So they're searching for
Sylar Saris, this bounty hunter, this target.
Sylar Saris, the slayer of Ardo Eris.
Yeah. Next time we do a draft, is he like an all-timer pick for us?
Yo,
he's tough.
Like this guy took like 5 stun rays to like the back of the head and still alive.
Yeah.
Still swimming.
Yeah, so I guess we went to the planet of Ardo Eris because he's Sylar Saris, the slayer of Ardo Eris.
Yes.
I thought that was a person, but I guess that's a planet, right?
No, it is. So. It is a planet. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe not. They didn't name the planet.
Who is Ardo Eris?
Yeah. Yo, he killed this one man, Ardo Eris.
Yeah.
I was like, he killed one guy.
Just one dude.
Yeah. He's a killer. Siler is for real.
He's a slippery mark.
Anyone catch the Nope, what am I doing? Oh, anyone catch the Jedi Fallen Order connection?
No.
So the reason why he got in trouble is he killed two members of the Haxian
Brood. Yes, I did catch that.
The ones, you know, the ones that are chasing you down through all of
No, I have four exclamation points after the two words Haxian Brood in my notes. I mean, play the original Jedi Fallen Order, and you will know what the Haxian Brood's about.
And favorite moment of that game.
Yeah. Can we jump into Kiner Corner real quick? Because like that scene where she's doing the debrief on Siler Saris, the music lit. that plays.
It's lit.
It is.
It's on another level. Like it's just so good.
I think it's
Andor level. It's like good. It's so cool, contemporary, ambient.
And like to be fair, like Lucasfilm's been churning out this like lo-fi Star Wars music a lot. Like there's an hour and a half program where you can just babysit Sabine Wren's cat that I actually have on my TV a lot.
Yeah, it's like it's good for work.
It's vibing and it's like and it's Star Warsy and it's lo-fi and it's fun. And like and also in Jedi Survivor, they had a bunch of people. It seems like it couldn't have all been the same like composer that made this, like different bands that have different songs, and you can play a jukebox and Survivor and there's all these other songs that are there, and this is like in that vein, but it's very very good. It's very very good. And I was vibing on that. And also there was like a thing right at the beginning of episode 9, there was like this sound that happened like in the music, and it was like this is like, oh my gosh, is this music going to be epic? And then it just like sifts back down into the background as Kyler's music always does. But it was like for a moment it just popped right at the beginning of episode 9, and I was like, yeah, okay.
Well, it's all like full saga grandiosity, you know, like the like of the sagas films. It's not like John Williams. It's kind of like
It's light. John Williams light. You know, and I mean that's the vibe that Filoni wants, and that's the vibe that he's gonna
get. You still get the Bad Batch theme. It's like you still get the Bad Batch theme. It's like
But it's not it's not front and center music. It's definitely like background score because it's an animation, and they want you to you know, you got 25 minutes to tell a story. Like.
Yeah, and part of the issue is a couple times in episode 9 I became aware of the music, which to me tends to indicate that it's not breaking through to me. If I'm like, you know what I mean? Like if suddenly I'm like, because I had the exact same moment, I think I knew exactly what you're talking about at the beginning of the episode, where I'm like,
Oh, okay.
Sounded great for a little bit of time.
Listen, he's great. They're doing, he's doing the things. You know,
they just won't let him do his thing.
We'll see. Like Ahsoka season two.
I think it's just cut. It's just the pacing is slightly different in an animated show. So it's like basically like the little motifs that just sound off, and then you go to the next thing for the next scenario.
Yeah, so fast. Yeah, man, we got a gator fight, foil boat. You guys have, do you guys are familiar with foil technology, that exists in America right now? It's like you put down this like fin that's sort of bent at a right angle and it lifts you off the water and you just like go faster. You just glide on a foil. That's what they were doing when they took off.
It's like windsurfing kind of.
It's kind of, well, but it's like elevated. It's like if you have a like an elevator in your thing, so it's just like all of your weight rests on one fin, and it's they do this in yacht in catamaran racing right now.
I've seen that, and I had no idea what that was, but that totally makes sense now. What you're saying, like, got it.
That was
very. It was like a. What is this? Are these aqua speeders or are they speeder boats? Like, what do we call these in Star Wars?
It's a,
I think aqua speeders, honestly.
Okay, aqua speeders, done. I love it. With the I like the sort of like the you know, that the jet propulsion system was on the back.
Yes,
of the, I did I like that.
That was obligatory, like classic boat rudder handle or whatever.
But it was like catamaran style, and I mean, all of it was just so great. Just like, you know, she's haggling with a like. Stupid pit droid, and like, you know, he folds immediately. And
She's like, get me a boat that doesn't sink like the last time or something. I was like, yes. And that was like, every line written for Ming-Na Wen was so good in this that I was like, what was happening in Book of Boba Fett? Like, what is happening in Mando with her? Like, why doesn't she have her own show? And why isn't the writing as good as it was in this episode? Like, that's just my question at the end of this episode.
Honestly. I will say this. I have a theory about what may be coming post Bad Batch season 3. But we'll talk more after the next episode.
Okay.
I also have a theory. I think the next episode is going to give us space to talk about that stuff.
Sure. I think it's going to be a female buddy cop show. And I think I do know who the two leads are. But we'll talk more about that after the next episode. So one thing I was going to say, too, is I just was Googling around because I'm trying to figure out what planet they were on, because I love the ecosystem of that planet.
I love it too.
Yeah. Because Ordo Eris is actually Ordo Eris is the space station that you're on in Jedi Fallen Order when you wake up.
Oh, no kidding.
That's
So that's where, because he killed Haxion Brood. Okay.
Very cool. I was gonna say that I do love the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. It felt like swamp, where it felt like very swamp, like
orange,
Florida, like everything.
Yeah, because we've been really light on Wrecker, and I love that Ming-Na Wen's like, and whatever your name is when she refers to Wrecker. I thought that was great. There's a lot of like great one-liners in there.
Yeah, she's great.
But we haven't had a good Wrecker episode where he actually gets to be strong and do strong stuff. So it's like we get full Gator.
Or be a demolition. He's a demolitions expert. Yeah, like to see him exercise that many times.
Yeah, that was cool. This was a strong Wrecker episode, and we haven't had one of those in a while.
I think he suplexes a gator at one point.
He does suplex a gator. That is is precedented.
Yeah.
Super great. I mean, so my thing with Fennec is I'm like, she'd be cooler if we saw her less. Like, I just think about the like Boba Fett quotient. It's like, if she was more mysterious, she'd be like cooler, because that's sort of what it is. But like, she's so great that it's like, okay, you're gonna play this card, she's gonna be a character that returns. Like, everyone can't be mysterious. But this is me being the galaxy size police. I'm like, bigger. Like, why don't we have a million bounty hunters? Why didn't we meet a new bounty hunter? Like, you know, whatever, because it's a show and it's an animated series, and you know, it makes sense.
Yeah,
but still, I do hope that the team you know, the story group and whatever is just like, let's just new character. Let's make this galaxy feel big. It'll make the times that we do callbacks or cameos like all that more.
Well, if you want new characters, Ben, you'll love the next episode.
We're burying the lead. I have to talk about one thing, because the best part of this episode was not about Fennec Shand. It was about Crosshair's hand. And honestly, y'all,
Adam was right.
Adam was right. So this is some bow taking to be had here.
And it was explicit. It was like, this is explicitly just in your head. Calm down. Like,
thank you for saying that. Cause I'm like, I'm gonna wait to see if they say anything. Cause I'm not going to be the person who says, by the way, guys, I was right. But
I would have done that, but no, I would not overlook this, Adam. I have your name written down in my notes. I'm like, take a bow, Adam. Adam was like, what if it's all in his own head and somehow that escaped all of us?
The droid says that exactly verbatim.
Yeah. So thank you, Adam.
Thanks, Adam.
You saw that coming from a mile away. Actually, we all get to take a few bows on this one.
Yeah.
Another one is, as we move forward, that there's a potential for Omega to have the Force. I think both of you guys.
Right. So perhaps, Wait, we don't even broach the beginning of 9, though. We're talking about the end of 9?
I think we can drift into 9 now, because we mentioned... Yeah, I think that was the last thing, was Crosshair's psychosomatic thing.
Yeah, and then he takes on meditation. Okay, that was pretty much it, but it was psychosomatic.
Yes.
But yeah, here we are at 9.
Sorry. I had to burst out.
What did you say? Sorry, missed
it. Ventress.
My
first note was just all caps, Ventress.
Yeah.
Okay. I made a mistake. I got an email from Star Wars today, and I was like, oh, this will be good, because there might be some things that I missed that we can talk about on the pod. And the fucking thumb image was of Ventress.
I know.
And I was like,
I
heard
Ventress,
man.
Her sweet hairdo. Well, you saw her in the trailer.
I know.
No,
I forgot, actually.
And I knew where it was going.
She was coming.
I knew where she was coming.
Episode 9, The Harbinger.
See, because Ventress Returns. With eight,
you're like, I haven't even watched yet.
All through eight, I was like, oh, it's going to be Ventress. I'm like, we haven't seen Ventress. Is it going to be Ventress? Like the whole episode. That's what I was thinking. So it's like, whatever. But then I was like, that wasn't the way I wanted to find out.
And Fennec calls someone at the end of eight. At the end of that episode, she sends out a transmission to
which we assume Ventress. Is Ventress, right?
Because I assumed it was Ventress, but still, I didn't want to see it in a thumbnail. I wanted to see it in the episode.
But what's a mystery? Is Ventress's motivations essentially. So, like, we'll get into that as we talk about nine.
Yeah.
But like, I cannot wait to talk about that with you guys because I feel like something's a brewing. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah,
something's
a brewing, but I don't know if it's a brewing in this series.
No, I don't think I don't think you're gonna get the cup, the final cup in the coffee bad. In the series. But like,
what's the cup of coffee there, friendo? What are you thinking?
I mean, I don't want to jump into theorizing right away.
Okay.
I just want to jump into the episode first, but like. There are hints here that like Ventress is breaking good and that Ventress is possibly just hates the Empire more than anything and therefore will do anything to sabotage the hunting of Force Sensitive.
Yes.
And that seems to be
Inquisitorious.
And essentially it's very subtextual in this episode though. It's really not remarked upon at all, which I thought was so tasteful. I thought it was so tasteful in how they kind of kept her motivations somewhat secret throughout the episode. And I have to think that, I don't know. I mean, could she start the path? You know what I mean? Like, could she be a part of that at some point?
Yes.
Are we going to see
her? Well, we know Quinlan Vos is part of the past. Her old bow.
Uh-huh.
That's where I'm going with all this. That's where this whole thing's going, right? Does she help Quinlan? Are they both like these vigilante, you know, do-gooders who protect all the Force sensitives who are being hunted? Yes. To me, that's beautiful and poetic.
We will see in 2025.
But the end of the
new animated series comes out.
Oh, that's your duo. Okay.
Because here's the thing.
What's the name of the last episode in the season, though?
I don't know. But hold on.
Here comes Calvary.
Here comes Calvary.
Who is
the Calvary? I don't know. But I mean,
Quinlan Vos and Asajj Ventress.
Yeah, Quinlan Vos is the Cavalry.
That's the Cavalry.
Oh.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Like, so they StarWars.com released an interview with Corbett, Jennifer Corbett, who is the co-creator, basically the showrunner of she's the one who does the Bad Batch, right? As much as it's Filoni.
Right. Yeah, Filoni
is doing this stuff.
Yeah,
and she's just kind of doing
it. Way to do other things.
And here's a direct quote. How she survived will be revealed in future content.
Okay.
That's what she said. But for this story, we were thrilled to include her and explore her unique connection to and compassion for Omega. That screams to me spinoff talk.
Yes.
Like, that is the thing. Is like, there's also not been an animated series going. Like there's always an animated series going.
Yeah.
Right? Almost always. And so, like, it's not to me like the Bad Batch is done and then no more animation. It feels to me like end of the Mandalorian season two and like Book of Boba Fett coming in January 2020, whatever. Like, I have a feeling the end of the series ends with like whatever the name of the series thing is, and it's Asajj Ventress and Shenik Fand, buddy cop together, starting the path with Quinlan Vos. Like, that's gonna be the thing.
Let's
fighting
go.
The good fight. Like, that's Let's gonna go. Be the animated series.
That sounds incredible to me. That's something I could rev my fist for.
Yeah.
I'd be so happy.
Yeah, that would be insane because she is she's so great. And you know, the whole episode I was waiting for, like, I'm like, are we going to talk about any of the stuff that all of us know about, all of our listeners know about, right? Like, I assume all our listeners have read Dark Disciple, you know, like, or at least know it exists. And then it's like, you know, and I'm like waiting for some nod, but at the end she was just like, I have plenty more lives or, you know, like.
Yep. Lives, plural.
Lives, plural. And I was like, okay, so she, that's insinuating to me that she lived and she's not a clone. Because the whole time I was like, is she as strong as she
I've
was?
I've got a few more lives, I think.
Or is it insinuating that she is a clone and knows she can be cloned again?
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I thought about that.
Right. Like, is that what lives, plural means? Here's
I think it's a commentary that she died in Dark Disciple and there's a retcon, essentially.
I think it's true.
Cheeky joke there.
Yeah.
I'm backing off on my clone theory at this point.
It meant more to me. It felt like more like, if she knows she died, she's not a clone, you know?
Yeah, I would.
So this episode, it's Wednesday. It's like halfway through Wednesday. It's almost noon or whatever. And then Adam texts Luke to use on text all of us. And I'm like,
I know.
Do we get to see what's in the back in this episode? That episode's called Heart.
I'm so sorry.
That did occur to me. I thought is she Project Necromancer for a second? Right.
So, and then Adam's like, no. You want to specify what's
so let me back this up. So what I had earlier that day, because I was like, I'm not gonna watch Bad Batch until Thursday. So I wasn't even thinking it's Wednesday. And so I got this like other thing on social media about the fact that like Hasbro is releasing their Last Command. Timothy Zahn 4-pack Black Series, which has Luke,
yeah,
Seaboff, yes, and Mara Jade. And so I just, everyone knows, anyone who's listened to the podcast or my friends know I'm obsessed with Luke. It's like my favorite poll.
They knew you were out there, Adam. They made it just
this
for
you.
No, I just got. And so I shared the link to the announcement, and then wrote Luke. But I like a half an hour later, I looked at my phone, and it's just like, message did not go through, so I realized the only thing that went through was Luke, and then Grant talked back. Like, oh no, I'm completely.
Do you know who you're talking to right now? Well, about like that day.
I kind of love that it happened, but what are the odds?
You just
that,
blew like, up Grant's time? Whole day with that.
I know.
My whole day was ruined by that. I was like, I gotta go home and get the corkboard.
Getting in accidents trying to watch Bad Batch. Do you want to hear another tinfoil hattie thing I have going on? Is that just this week, during one of many Comic Cons, Ewan McGregor was asked, and he's like, "You have not. I don't think you've seen the last of me playing Obi-Wan." He has come out and said that, and I'm like, so now you have Asajj Ventress alive, and the possibility that she helps start the path. And can you imagine, whether it's in cartoon or live action? Like, to me, imagine if you had a live action Obi-Wan meeting Asajj Ventress, who these two people fought
all the time, and now they're allies.
All the time, and now they're allies. Like, that would be amazing.
Oh, I can't.
You could never match the energy from the animation, though, between them two. Like, that energy.
Yes, it would. My heart is soaring just thinking of that.
They have to smash. They have to bone down, right?
Yeah, there was like sexual chemistry. I guess everyone has sexual chemistry with Obi-Wan, though, I gotta say.
Right, it is. You know,
yeah.
I myself.
Even the mullet, you know?
Yeah.
I know.
The mullet, that's Attack of the Clones is
like the best Obi-Wan. We're gonna see that mullet.
In
glory,
in like IMAX,
like movie.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah, a great episode, super fun. Did any of you guys cry during this episode? Because I did.
No, what'd you cry about?
So
I love it.
Did you cry during the squid, the touching that tooth or whatever?
Oh yeah, no, the boop.
That was,
when
that
she was like,
amazing, yeah,
boop on the squid.
She booped the tooth.
I loved that. No, it was back when they're all talking about like, can we trust Asajj, blah blah blah, and like, in you have Omega being awesome as she always is, like just being I don't think she's like, I don't think she's bad, like I looked at her, she has kind eyes, like blah blah blah, and like, and Crosshair is like, you know, like, oh no, she's blah blah bad, blah blah blah, and she's like, I never gave up on you, did I? And he's like,
yeah.
You know?
Which is, that did catch me. And the super amazing part is at the very end when they fight off the Kraken.
Yeah,
we're just calling
the Kraken,
Kraken, right?
The turtle Kraken.
It's a Kraken. That like Crosshair, I mean, they shoot it, but Crosshair holds his arm out to Asajj, right? Like, it's a very nice moment of just like, again, that's what Omega does. Like, Omega, like, is the healer of everyone in terms of that.
She's like I look at your soul and I see you're a good person. And you shouldn't be judged on your past transgressions. Yeah. And it's just, she's very kind and she's very lovely. And, you know, I don't know, maybe she'll be force sensitive. Maybe she won't. They left it very ambiguous.
Very ambiguous. And I still think it's that she has
at the end there where it's like, is she is Asajj lying? And the Bad Batch thinks she's lying and all stuff. But like,
and I love it about, I am, she basically says I am, but about what?
Right. I love that.
I love that. It's a great line.
Very meta.
Like, well, yeah, I was lying, but I'm not going to tell you about what.
And she's like, well, if she is force sensitive, that means you'll have to let go of her. So are you prepared to do that? Knowing full well they're not. And, you know, but so this is when I'll take my bow. Thank me mm-hmm. very much. They, you know, we got Asajj as a mentor for Omega for a minute.
And oh, we right. might get yes. it again. Well yeah. done. Yeah,
so that's absolutely. What I, that's where I got sort of emotionally choked up a little bit, where I was just like, this woman is trying to teach this little girl about this spiritualism. And these guys are just constantly getting in the way. And it was like, yeah. I was annoyed by that. I was like, really, like, yes. I was flustered yeah. by that. And I was very emotional about that. I was like, can you just let Asajj, like, this is good for both Asajj and Omega. And like, just let this, you know, go ahead. Cause I feel it, that was just bothersome to me. And then also like, it was just touching that I just to see Asajj take that sort of a role in this show.
Yeah.
Rather than just being like yeah. a sniveling villain who's trying to kill everyone all the time. I was just like, this is actually really incredible stuff. And, but obviously the Bad Batch are these overprotective parents who don't understand
yeah.
this character's past.
They're Labrador so, retrievers that are
audience,
like, yeah.
I think for the audience yeah, is so effective.
And overprotective, I just
wonder if you guys
like
had that same yes, feeling.
It, but I
God, let her teach this kid because it's beautiful. And what the hell?
So
like, leave them alone.
But they're just right, dumb so warriors. They don't know what they're doing. They're just like, know, oh, yeah. we protect. Yeah. They're dogs. Yeah. They're Labrador retrievers just being like, no.
They really are loud. So true.
They are. Let's play the title game for a second, and I'll give you my theory first because it kind of pertains to this. Is like, what is the harbinger, right? So, or I had a friend who Ben, who was Jenna, just for background.
Oh, nice.
Who we were talking one day, and she goes, I had like something that said harbinger on it. And she says, why does it say harbinger? And I'm like, excuse me?
She says, yeah,
harbinger. And I felt we to this day it's still an inside joke because she'll say it and I'll laugh for like an hour long because Jenna is like one of the smartest people I know yeah. in the world, and anytime I could catch her at like not being smart was one of my favorite things. And it's just like, she's like, I don't know, I've only read the word, I've never heard it out loud.
Oh, like, Jenna,
right? But it's one of those things, like, you totally think about it, but like, anyway, so
I was just listening to her beautiful singing today actually on my 2-hour drive home.
Very nice. I always think of Harbinger whenever I see Harbinger. Sorry, Jenna.
I'm sure she's listening to every episode.
So there's a lot of theories about what's a harbinger, right? Like it is referring to or it is hinting at something to come in the future.
It's almost like a bringer of different paradigm or something, right?
Hope, and so possibly. I
don't
think,
know what the definition is, but
I think yeah. Omega's constant insistence in this episode of, leave me alone, dads.
Yeah.
Is a harbinger to how the whole series ends, which is the Bad Batch saying yeah. goodbye to
Omega. Because she has to grow up.
Yeah.
And she has to. I mean,
yeah.
They mentioned that she's like actually physically older than they are, which is funny.
You have to do a yep. Finding Nemo moment with Hunter at the very end or something.
Yeah.
And she has to grow beyond. And I mean, if I want to add to your guys' dream team here, I mean, Omega, Asajj Ventress, Quinlan Vos, and Fennec Shand. I mean, and maybe Stark it's not, path. I mean, Fennec Shand,
create and monitor.
Yeah, I will take yeah. like, yeah, you know,
but
Asajj.
Doesn't that seem
but,
like an
so
Omega?
Can I go the opposite yeah. way and say that Harbinger is going to be possibly there's a dark context to it? Or like
there generally is, yeah.
Evil context to it, because right. So that's it, Adam. That's what I'm trying to hone in on. The word harbinger is usually like harbinger
yeah,
of doom
right.
is a phrase you've heard yeah, oftentimes right. attached yeah. to that word. And so I think that the Empire does get what they need from Omega, and it does make possible what we see in, you know, the sequel trilogy, Snoke and yeah. and Palpatine and what happens there. I think the only way that happens is with her and Grogu and like these certain characters that we see along the way. I think these actually quintessential yeah.
the harbinger of the Emperor's return.
Exactly. The harbinger yeah. of the Emperor's yeah. return. That's sort of
the other theory in line is the harbinger of Pabu's destruction, ultimate destruction, which yeah. I think is also coming.
Yeah. She's like, you need to leave here because everyone's going to yeah. be like, if I can find you.
And they're not going to. I don't think they are. And I think it's going to lead to some bad times.
Yeah. That's why we're having our last drinks tonight and we're leaving.
Yeah.
Our first transport out of here is a.
That's right. Morning. Yeah. Well, I've got this great little cantina out on Ordu Minor. It's hardly any murders there. It'll be great.
Again, episode 14 is called Flash Strike, let's just say. Next week, and I'm not saying this move is long, but I just was noticing this. Next week's another, we got another two header.
Oh, we do a double header, really?
Yeah. Great. Identity Crisis and Point of No Return. And boy, is that ever a title for kind of the beginning of the end of a series. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Is
Point of No Return. Wow, that's gonna be a lot.
And then we got
stakes.
Four episodes after that. So I feel like we are starting to enter the end game.
Yeah.
Of this, or we will be after next week.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Excited about that. When are we going to cover the High Republic? There's a book that's been out for a minute right now that I started to read and then I haven't read for a couple weeks, but
yeah.
Do you want to Jango Fett? That first issue of Jango Fett was so good. Ethan Sachs crushed the first. That yeah. Just this arc. Mace Windu. We have Mace Windu and Jango Fett. Maybe we split that up in an episode. Or we do Mace Windu and Jango Fett.
They're short series though, right? They're like four issues.
I think maybe we wait till the miniseries is over.
There's just a lot of good Star Wars out right
now. So I mean we did two tonight, right? We did two major topics. Mm-hmm. I think we're safe from. I don't think we're gonna get any big reveals of anything between now and Acolyte. Like I think the shop is closed in terms of like.
Yeah,
though it's been all Acolyte.
Have you noticed it was like a massive push by Disney lately? They did a Empire State Building takeover.
Yeah,
and they had
with Hayden Christensen. Like,
yeah, and they had Darth Vader on the Empire State Building. Like, they've been pushing a lot trying to get Star Wars back into the zeitgeist. And it's just kind of interesting that's happened to me.
Yeah, no, agreed.
I don't know.
What's the next Hayden project going to be?
Right? Ahsoka season 2.
Yeah, Ahsoka season 2. Yeah.
Ahsoka season 2. Oh, yeah, right. Ahsoka season 2.
So
which hasn't been announced yet, but I'm announcing it.
No, but they said it's in production. Remember that was one of the that's one of the things where they had okay. I was thinking about that earlier. It kind of slipped.
What if like the Emperor creates like a force shield for the known galaxy, so like his spirit can't enter that area or something? And like, because like, why wasn't he there in the sequels? You know, like in people's minds.
He is technically one of the voices that Ahsoka, or not that Ahsoka, that Rey hears.
You're talking about Sidious.
Oh wait, who are we talking about? What now?
I'm talking about Vader.
Vader.
Oh yeah, he was there.
You hear Hayden's voice.
She hears Hayden's voice. He's, you know.
Yeah.
He's there for Rey. I think there's bigger and better things to come for Hayden Christensen and Anakin Skywalker in the extended universe and Howard.
I really do think that Obi-Wan was a soft test to see how Hayden would do. To be honest, I think they're like, let's test him out. He's been doing like Canadian romance movies for the last couple of years. Let's see how he's doing on the big screen. And then I think they were like, this is great. Let's get him in Ahsoka. And he was gangbusters in Ahsoka. And I think there's so much love for him that I think they're going to figure out ways to put him in as much as they possibly can.
Yeah.
And I'm all for it.
Yep.
Back to scheduling stuff. So I think next week we should do a double header of let's cover Bad Batch and the two High Republic books. One is that junior novel, so that'll take all of an hour to read.
Okay.
And then the Defy the Storm. The reason I'm saying that is because in 2 weeks or about 10 days, the Living Force novel comes out. And that's
the big
has been getting a ton of buzz. They just removed the embargo for comments and reviews on that, and the internet's kind of blown up about what's going on with that book, so we might want to cover that sooner rather than later. But I think we should get to the High Republic before we do that. So how are we feeling? I mean, we're doing this on air, we're doing it live, so I'm putting you in a bit of a corner, but
let's
how do we
it.
About
no, let's do it. Well, we can.
We can, higher it, yeah. We can do it.
I want to for sure.
I'll be in Florida, but we'll figure that out off air.
Yeah, we'll figure out timing, but yeah. Well, I mean, if you push it towards the weekend, that gives us, 10 days.
Yeah, I'm gone all weekend, so we'll figure that out off air. We'll
figure it out off air.
If it's you guys, I'm sure you'll do a great job.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
But you can't go back to Pabu.
I know. I'm going to go to Pabu. Yeah. But yeah, word, man. I love it.
Yeah. But yeah, next week we're going to do a lot of stuff. Obviously, Bad Batch. Definitely come back. Listen to us for Bad Batch coverage. I feel like we talked more about the Acolyte than most other news podcasts I listen to, and sort of, you know,
in
culture
a deeper
podcasts.
Way, for sure. Yeah.
We went deeper than I was expecting.
We went in a lot of directions, and I think we gave a lot of praise, and then we talked a lot about possible lore and what could unfold there, which was so cool because I don't really get that lens on Star Wars. I usually get the, hey, here's Star Wars as it's one, you know,
yeah, it's very
category on its own with its crazy fan base. Yeah. And it's nice to kind of get into the weeds in Star Wars because, you know, it's, I just love storytelling, and I think that it's fun to promote these sort of things rather than sort of like the metrics behind what are successful stories and talking about all stories as different categories and as if they compete against each other, which is it's sort of a lot of the things I listen to. And so it's nice to actually talk about one story and really get into that landscape and really talk about the nitty gritty details. And so happy I can do that with you guys every week. It's great stuff.
No, it's awesome.
Us too. Love it.
Yep, favorite part of the week, man.
Agreed.
Oh my gosh, I just like choked on my own breath. Other than that, everything's good here. How are you?
Everything's fine here. Fine here.
Situation normal.
Normal. How are you?
Wait, when that moment happens, guys, I am going to weep. Like these certain moments.
Oh, I'm going to laugh so loud. This is like my favorite joke in all of Star Wars. My favorite comedy moment of all of Star Wars is that moment.
It's so
I know all these things that I say you as comedic, I'm just going to get so emotional over because they're just so.
We're just going to be just crying our eyes out. Everyone's going to be like, what's wrong with those guys?
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
Let's be honest. We're going to get kicked out.
Jedi rocks.
Those
guys are crying.
I know. When we're pumping our fists, standing up in Attack of the Clones, they're going to be like, you need to leave.
And just stopping and yelling.
Yeah. We're getting escorted out for Attack of the Clones.
Oh my gosh.
The night was going great until about 2 a.m. when we had to leave Attack of the Clones.
Some exuberant fans. Awesome. Can't wait for that with you guys. I can't believe we're doing it. I'm so excited.
Great.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Next week we're gonna talk about so many great things with Star Wars. It's awesome. It's a deluge of awesome. And looking forward to it. We'll, get yourself a drink for that and saddle up, and we'll talk to you next week on
Cantina Chronicles.